This episode of Yes But Why Podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
Social media is a wild and woolly place, and I hate that I have to do it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's relevant to the conversation about acting, too. I mean, There are castings where they'll say, we don't want anybody with less than, you know, 10,000 followers on Instagram or
really?
Stuff like that. Oh, yeah. And even before I left L.A. proper, they were even doing that with voiceover auditions. Like, don't send anybody unless they have X number of followers on Instagram. Yeah.
Wow.
Right. So it's not even really about your talent anymore. It's about how many, like, butts and seats can you bring, you know, or eyes on the tube or... you know, stuff like that. It's not really about your work.
I'm not saying that I like it, but I am going to say at least there's a level of egalitarianism. Like we don't know what makes the internet excited about stuff. I don't understand it.
Right.
Right.
Mm-mm.
But some people do. And if they figured it out, all right, there you go.
Yeah.
Here's some more opportunities. Let's see what else you can do with that. And, you know, the ones that'll work will work, and the ones that won't, you know, will fizzle out like everything.
Right.
But
exactly.
At the same time, it's like, in my mind, I'm like, it's better than them checking you out and being like, she's hot, she's not, she's hot. It's like, I'd literally rather just tell you how many followers. Like, that it seems cleaner. It seems more like... an algorithm did it. It's not dirty.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's something to sink our teeth into to get started. Like, you're talking about the idea of, like, your talent gets you through the door. Now, in your experience, you've done a lot of work on, you know, film and television and voiceover and stuff. Do you think before the internet became such a huge thing and likes and follows were a big deal, do you actually think people were getting it on their talent?
I would have to say, yeah, because there weren't all these avenues to check other things or see how popular they were in the public, per se, you know?
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I would have to go with that. And I mean, although the flip side of that is now that there's more opportunities than ever. I mean, you can start your own Instagram live channel. You can, you know, get on all these, you know, you got all these streamers, Netflix, Hulu, original series. I mean, YouTube got people that you can just create your own work, which is amazing due to the technology. But the technology has also, particularly in the voiceover industry, has now made every person in the world think that they're a voiceover because they have a laptop and a USB mic. They're willing to go and put themselves on Fiverr and sell their services for $5. And okay, I guess if you can get that, that's great. But what's happening is that's lowering the bar for the people who put in the time to go to workshops, to go to workouts every week, to get a good demo and pay good money for a good demo, and, you know, who are invested in the casting websites every month, paying their dues for those things. And here's somebody else sitting in their basement on, you know, on their laptop, like I said, and USB mic and, you know, just cranking out stuff for $5.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, in some cases, the quality can be negotiable. I mean, used to be people would really want a higher quality file, and now everybody just, MP3, good enough. So.
Yeah. Well, there definitely is like a lower quality accepted, You know, I think because you were saying there's so much more opportunity, there's so much more out there. So sometimes mm-hmm. it used to be like only a few things got made. So they really had to vet it to make sure it was, you know, sellable and good. Now it's mm-hmm. like, just make it. We'll throw right. it at people and see what happens. You know, even like you're saying on YouTube, people are making their own stuff. So right. potentially mm-hmm. in every particular avenue of those situations, people aren't being paid properly. You know, there could be sort of legal infringement situations. We don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, right. like Absolutely. Who knows if the crew is properly compensated or safety, all that stuff. It's like
right. insurance.
The yeah. whole idea of it is it has changed. And right. now it's more of a do-it-yourself. I wonder, though, there's still high-quality things, but I worry that, and this is a weird road to go down, but, like, I worry that people who are doing great things are just going to get lost in the shuffle.
Well, there's that. I mean, and therein lies the social media aspect, because if you've got a big following and you can push that stuff out there, you have a better chance than someone who's like, you know what, I'm not really into social media. I'm doing great work, but I can't really get it seen. I can't get it out there.
Yeah. Yeah, wild. Wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when did you first move to LA? You say you're not in LA now, but you moved to LA at mm-hmm. some point. How'd you get there? What was the let's go do it?
At the time I was living in Florida, so I was pretty much a regional actor, driving any number of hours each way from Miami and Tampa and Jacksonville and Atlanta and North Carolina, New Orleans for auditions and callbacks. And I had moved in with a guy who was also a regional actor. And we were living in this 2-3-bedroom house, cement block in Florida. And it was just terrible in the summertime. It was so hot. And we were like, we need to look for a different place because this is just not going to cut it. The air conditioner was running constantly. And at some point, we just had a conversation about, why don't we think about moving to LA? And so we did.
You and your roommate.
Simple as that. Yeah, we were actually dating. So it was like a live-in couple situation.
Right. I was going to be like, whoa, that's super intense for two roommates to just be like, let's do it. Smart, though.
Yeah. No, it was.
Nice to have two people, you know what I mean? Like any group of anyone considering moving to LA who's listening to this right now, take a friend. It seems like a good plan.
Right.
You can help each other.
And you cannot, pretty much, unless you've got a really good job that pays a lot of money that's going to let you be flexible to go on auditions, you're not going to be able to afford the rent on your own. So you will end up with a roommate, you know, unless you're making so much money that you don't need one.
Yeah. Your bestie should be in coding. Do that, guys. You can work from home, make a lot of money with computers. Guys, it's a good plan.
Right. Exactly. And then you're flexible. You can go on auditions, you know, at any time. So, yeah.
So how did you do it?
Say again?
But how did you do it?
How did I get to LA? Or how did I do living and managing?
Living and managing.
Well, there was somebody to split the rent with at the beginning, which was great. And at that time, I had just come off of a Publix regional spot in Florida. So I was getting residuals from that. And I also had a Kellogg spot that I had booked that I was getting some residuals and holding fees from. And I also had a settlement of sorts from a divorce. So I had some, you know, cash in hand to get out there and get started, get taking workshops and get to casting director workshops and things like that. But I saw that the money was depleting quickly because stuff's not cheap in LA. And I found a part-time job. It so happened I was on Facebook and I checked in with a friend of mine and I said, hey, are you still here in LA or did you move back to Florida? And he said, no, I moved back to Florida. And I said, oh, wow. He says, how are you managing? And I told him, and I said, yeah, but I'm going to need to be looking for something soon. And he's like, hey, I was working for these guys that have a parking company, and they need an office manager. You'd be perfect. So he hooked me up with them. I went and had the interview, got the job, and I think I was there for like 6 of the 7 years that I was in LA, you know, hardcore doing it. So,
wow.
And they knew coming in the door that I was looking, you know, for something flexible. It was a part-time job, which was great. And then whenever I had an audition or stuff like that, I would just say, hey, I've got an audition tomorrow. I'm going to leave and come back. Or I've got an audition. I'm just going to leave and not come back. I'll make up the hours tomorrow. They were super flexible. And it was a real blessing to have that. So if you can find a situation like that, that's ideal.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a great side hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good.
That was great. Yeah.
It's always nice, too, when your day job pals help out.
Yeah, absolutely. And at that time, too, I was still doing the pay-to-play site for VoiceOver and getting, a good bit of work from those. So that was also a supplement to my income.
Was that like free Fiverr?
No, I was on like Voices.com and Voice123. They're like, I don't know what they are now. They're like, at that time, I think it was $199 or $299 a year. And, you know, you're eligible for all these auditions and jobs. People can book you directly.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
And I
so like a casting site.
To...
That's awesome.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, there was always timing involved. And you had to, like, if you saw something, you had to run in the booth and do your audition and get it uploaded within a certain amount of time and all that stuff. So, you know, it wasn't free, you know, free and easy. You know, you just had to be on that, you know, laptop, you know, for a significant amount of time during the day to be on watching the auditions. Because I don't think at that time we had the notifications that you can do now on your phone, like, ding, you have an email, bing, you have an audition, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, we're so taken care of these days. It's crazy.
Mm. But I've had to eliminate all that stuff. For a while, I was getting notified from a couple of other sites that I was on, and I was like, this is madness. And I want my life back.
Yeah.
It's great to have the work and great to be contacted. But at the same time, I'm like, this is running my life and I want my life back.
Yeah. Yeah. The hustle can be super, super intense.
Mm-hmm. Especially in LA. I mean, you're competing against,
everyone.
When I was in Florida and Atlanta, it's a whole different story. But when you're here in LA, it's, you know, I don't want to say it's necessarily dog eat dog, but it's intense.
Yeah.
It's intense. You got to be out there. You got to be doing stuff. You got to be seeing people, you know, you class all the time, workshops all the time, go, go, go. Plus, you know, you're trying to work and make your rent and everything and get to auditions. It is, it's intense. Yeah.
So do you take a bunch of workshops all the time? Do you keep one going all the time?
No, I haven't. I don't think I've been to a acting workshop in, oh, I can't say that. I did go to a little improv thing out here that someone was doing in the desert. We'd met early on when I came here just about 3 years ago, and she says, I do an improv thing, you should come. I was like, oh, yeah. And every time it came up, she'd have it once a month, and every time it came up, I had something else on my calendar. And finally, like 2 months ago, I was like, oh, I can make it to the improv. So I think that's the last thing that I did. But when I moved to the desert, I was very fortunate to hook up with one of the local theaters. And I don't know how many shows I've done there. More than a dozen, I think, whether they're readings or full-blown theatrical productions. And that kept me working because you're, you know, rehearsing 6 to 8 weeks in a row. And then you're got your show up at least 2 weekends in a row. And if I'm in a show, I don't have time for a class or a workshop.
Yeah, but that's good that you found that little nook. What's the name of the theater?
It's called High Desert Cultural Center.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
That has such a nice ring to it.
High Desert. It's a nice place.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, just cultural center. I'm like, ooh, so much could happen there. I'm very excited.
Mm. Yeah, they actually do an improv festival. It was in the summer, like in July, and now I think they're doing it in, I want to say, November.
Sure,
the weekend,
summer starts.
Weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, especially in the desert.
Yeah.
It's 100 degrees.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they do that there. And then they just opened up a building in the neighboring town that is basically a visual and performing arts center is what they're calling it. I don't know that they've actually had any performing arts there yet, but they do have like a nice wardrobe room there and a bit of a workshop to complement, you know, make props or whatever they need for the main theater. And then they've had quite a few gallery openings. So all kinds of media, art, paint, abstracts. They've had at least 4 or 5 shows, I think, in there. That they range from, I don't know, a month to 8 weeks, 10 weeks.
Super cool.
So they've got a good thing. Yeah, they got a nice thing going on over there.
Yeah. That's awesome. Where is it that you've moved from LA? I mean, you don't have to share the specific details if you don't want to, but you're in the desert, okay. Right?
I am in the desert. I am about, 3 miles from the entrance of Joshua Tree National Park.
Whoa. What made you make the move?
Well, friends of mine were getting married at a ranch in San Bernardino in early April of 2016. And we have a group of 8 or 10 friends that all met downtown, and we hung out a bunch together and really enjoy each other's company. And this couple is one of those two in the group. So I was thinking, wow, what if the rest of us took a little trip, maybe made it a 4-day weekend where we go somewhere together and like big chill it, rent a house and, you know, do some sightseeing or whatever. And it turned out only 3 of us were able to make it. And, our friend Zach was like, well, we could go to Joshua Tree, we could go to Death Valley, or we could go to, and I can't remember what the other choice was. So we all decided on Joshua Tree. He had said he'd been out here once, and neither my friend Carrie or I had ever been. So we drive out, and we reach, there's 2 grades that you have to go up to get into the Morongo Valley. And the second grade is called the Yucca Grade. And as you come up the grade, the Joshua trees start to come into view because they thrive at a certain number of feet above sea level. So as we started to rise, we started to see the Joshua trees, and there was something happening to me as we entered the space. I called it my stand up and pay attention moment because I literally, in the passenger seat of my friend's car, what could feel myself straightening up, like my head was being pulled up to the roof of the car. And I was kind of like a periscope looking around at this place that I had never seen. It's like, you know, people say it looks like it's out of a Dr. Seuss book. Other people say it's like living on the moon, especially on a full moon night. If you go into the park or, you know, anywhere that's pretty desolate, it's an amazing place. And all weekend while we were here, there was just this feeling that I couldn't shake of there's something about this place and I need to know what it is. And I jokingly said to them, you know, I could buy some property and we all could have tiny houses, you know, on a couple of acres. You guys could come and visit on the weekends or whatever. So subsequently, I made a couple of visits back to make sure that I wasn't just crazy. On one of my trips back and forth, I thought, you know, Dawn, you moved to LA to be closer to this acting career, and now you're going to take yourself 2.5 hours outside of LA. How's that going to work? And then it came to me that when I was, like I discussed earlier, when I was living in Orlando, I would drive 4 hours each way to Miami for auditions and callbacks, 6 hours each way to Atlanta. You know, it was more than 6 hours to Wilmington, North Carolina, 90 minutes each way to Tampa. And I thought, 2.5 hours from LA, you know, I've done more than that when I lived in Florida. So that kind of sealed the deal for me. The other thing that sealed the deal was I made a commitment to come out and take a workshop here in the desert. And that was another opportunity just to check out the place and go to the different, you know, restaurants and shops and all that kind of stuff and just kind of get a feel for the area. Well, before I left to come out here, I rented an Airbnb and I said to my friend Carrie, I said, you know, I don't know what it is. I can't explain it, but I just get the feeling that this guy at this Airbnb is going to ask me to house it. So I get out here, I check into the Airbnb and I sit on the front porch with the guy and the silence out here is unbelievable. I mean, it's just like nothing you've ever heard, not to be a pun. It really is silent. So we're sitting on the front porch. I'm thinking tears because of this silence. And the guy is looking at me. He's like, are you all right? And I'm like, yeah. I said, I'm thinking about moving here. And this is one of the reasons why. This is just an incredible feeling to sit here and hear absolutely nothing. So I said, and by the way, I'm also looking for a house sitting situation. So I hung up some flyers because I called the Chamber of Commerce before I, you know, made the trip asking, do people go away in the summer? Do they look for people to house sit? And knowing that that would give me an opportunity to learn more about the area too. So I said, yeah, I hung up some flyers at the health food store. So time moves on. I go to the workshop. The weekend goes by. Sunday afternoon, I would think I was sitting on the front porch of that place coloring. And he comes out and he goes, so I'm going camping in Denver next week. I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. He's like, well, it would be, except that I forgot to black out the Airbnb and I've got two guests coming. It didn't even register to me. I just said back, oh, gosh, what are you going to do? And he looked at me and said, well, you were talking about house sitting. I was like, this is really happening right now. This opportunity is happening. So I said, well, I need to go back to LA and check my schedule. He had no Wi-Fi at the house, so I didn't bother bringing my laptop or anything like that. But I knew I would have work the following week that I would need to do. So I said, let me go back to LA and check my calendar. We made all the arrangements about, like, where's the key going to be? And then as I'm packing the car, he comes out on the front porch with this, like, BB rifle. And I'm like, what is that? He says, well, in case you need to make a show of force, you know, just leave this by the front door. And he said, I'd put a BB pillow by your, you know, on the bed too. So just keep that handy. I was like, oh my God. it was a little strange. So I go back to LA, I get my stuff, I come out and I'm here for 8 days. And that gave me an opportunity to also take more seriously, like looking for a place to live, which I did and found the place that I'm living now. And, it's been great. I have no regrets. And there's a part of me that felt that I was being called here for something. And I still don't think I know what that might be, but I knew I had to be here. It was just this strong pull physically and almost spiritually, like I need to be here. And it's a very interesting community. They're very active about the environment and the desert and keeping, especially in Joshua Tree proper, keeping out corporate interests. Like they've been fighting with Dollar General for 10 years now not to come here because there's already five within, you know, a 6 to 20 mile radius of any town in the Morongo Basin, which is ridiculous. That's a whole another conversation. If you want to see what Dollar General's you know, corporate plan is for the future, just go out and Google Dollar General, you know, expansion and see what they're up to.
I didn't know so they were somebody to worry about.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. They're counting on people being poor for the rest of their lives, essentially. But it's interesting to go out and just read. Any one article will tell you exactly what they're doing.
Oh.
Yeah. So they're like betting on people are never going to make any money. And that sounds very familiar to like the people that were betting on the folks that were going to default on their, you know, mortgages that they probably shouldn't have had in the first place. So it feels a little like that. And this community doesn't really stand for that sort of nonsense, if you will.
Well, that's great.
So, yeah. So and it's a very close and small community. There's a lot of music here. There's a lot of artists, just a lot of really good salt of the earth people doing really great things. So, yeah, so that's how I ended up in the desert.
Yeah. And I totally hear you about the drive. Like, it seems worse. Like, it sounds, you know what I mean? Like, I've driven 2 hours, no problem. You
right.
know, so it's like, yeah, of course.
Well, and the fun thing is, you know I still have people there. So when I, you know, if something comes up and I need to go into town, I'm depending on where in town it is, I'll say, hey, can I surf your couch overnight or can I come and stay overnight or whatever? And people are more than accommodating, you know, because it's nice to get to see them. Sometimes some of them come out here, which is great. They enjoy a little trip to the desert. So all in all, it's been really good. So I'll be 3 years here at the end of July. Yeah.
When you made the move, what did your friends say? Like your friends who went with you the first time?
Yeah. They were kind of shocked. Like, really? You're going to move out there? I mean, some of them are the ones that come and visit me now because they really liked it. Yeah. And Carrie, you know, and they've come out and see me in shows too, which is really great. So those are friends. Friends that'll travel 2.5 hours to come and see you in a show. Those are real friends. So I appreciate them. But yeah, they were a little surprised. Like, wow, you're really going to do this? I'm like, yeah, I really am. Yeah. It felt right. And I think, too, the other thing for me was ever since I moved out of my parents' house in Jersey, I have decorated every place I've ever lived as if it were the desert. And I mean, like Native American prints and Kachina dolls and like adobe and cactus and like dish towels and rugs and bedspreads and, you know, just all that kind of stuff. So I think there was something in me that knew, because when I came into this apartment and, like I said, made a beeline for the walk-in closet, which I knew would become my voiceover booth. And then I looked out at my view out the front window and I looked at the property manager and I said, I feel like I've been preparing for this my whole life, because now it's not only inside my home, it's outside too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
it's crazy how we, like, I don't know, there are so many clues we're giving ourselves. You know, like, I have this theory.
And paying attention.
Mm-hmm. I have this theory that if you're caught, like, for the people who don't know what they're going to do with their lives, I will say to them, what did you want to be when you were a kid? Whatever you wanted to be when you were a kid is analogous to something you can do right now. So. Right. Figure out what it was. I mean, like, if you wanted to be a fireman, all right, maybe being a fireman might be intense. And maybe you're like, yeah, I don't want to do that physical thing. Okay, but there are other things you could certainly do. You know, there's so many things. Like, what's a fireman do that you're excited by? Helping people? Cool. Lots of jobs available for that.
Yeah.
Do you like fire? Okay. All right. We can find some. Sure. You could sell fireworks. How about that? You know, like, it's just like... I love the fact that that the decorations in your house had been telling you for years that that's where you needed to live. And I just feel like there's so much of that in life. Like, now I'm going to look around my own house and be like, what am I telling myself?
Right. Kind of, what am I attracted to? What speaks to me?
Yeah. You know what, though? I'm not a big decorator at all. I'm like, I've been like a 24-year-old guy for my whole life. Like, every apartment I lived in was like bare walls and like a futon and like literally like a 2 or 3 things tacked up on the wall. When my husband moved in with me when we were dating, he was like, your house is like a serial killer's house. Like, can I put something on the wall? And I was like, and one day after he moved in, it was like, I went to work. And when I came back that first day, he had put tons and tons of stuff all over the walls. And
oh,
okay. And some of it was my stuff, but I just didn't, I don't know.
It wasn't important to you. Yeah. And he does that now, right? He cleans all that. That's my first thing. Like, when I'm walking to someone's house and they have a ton of tchotchkes laying around and stuff, I'm like, who has time to clean all this?
Yeah, no. No, we have a few weird tchotchkes, but especially when we had the baby, I took all the tiny little stuff and put it in a box and was like, all right, you get to come out later. Someday I'll have a curio for you, but
there
not
you
today.
Mm-mm.
Now it's like everything's on the highest shelf unless it's like a painting on the wall. But he has so many paintings, like random, like, how do you have all these paintings? How are you a bachelor with this much art?
No,
I
had
like
two
calendars.
Have a beer can collection or something. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man. Like all my friends that have the cork board made out of wine cork.
Oh, wine
like,
cork.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure. That's great. Like, throw it away. Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So now that you're in this place that's like,
you know, sort of fulfilling on a spiritual level. Has that affected your work? Like, are you calmer about it? Are you, how have the auditions that you've had to go on in the past couple of years been? Like, has it been like you're super psyched to get home? How does it feel, the new style of life?
Well, to be honest, I, you know, the first year I was out here, I did travel into LA for a number of auditions. And it is a beautiful place. So it is, I do get anxious to be back. I love going into LA and catching up with my friends and, you know, being downtown and seeing the changes that are happening there since I lived there for 3 years. But it's great to get back. As far as whether this has affected my work, I think in a way of even more, I don't know, I guess throwing it away is the best way to say it. Like early on in this career, I was fortunate enough to recognize that their decision has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. Necessarily, you know, and really that is the biggest gift that any actor can give themselves, is to come to that understanding that the best you can do is go in the room, perform your best, and leave.
Yep.
And if they like it, great. If they don't, it wasn't what they were looking for. So I think that's been that has increased for me, just that feeling. Now, the funny thing was that when I came out here, I moved in August. So I paid the month of August in both LA and here, and then moved out on weekends. And they were having auditions for a version of Dracula at this High Desert Cultural Center, but they were during the week when I was not going to be here. So I emailed the theater and I said, hey, I'm moving to town, new actor. I'm interested in auditioning, but I'm not able to make it. Is he holding any other off auditions on other nights? And they're like, oh, yeah, I'll have him get in touch with you. So he did. And then we made arrangements when I came out. And I went in the room and I read from the script. And he said, okay, just wait outside. And then there was another guy that had come and he did his audition and then came out and we sat there and chit-chatted for a little bit. And then Howard came out and with two scripts and he handed me one and he handed the guy one and he's like, I want you to do it. And I was like, wow. So that was a nice feeling to know that my work was, you know, good enough that whoever else he saw for the role in the two previous audition nights, that he chose to use my performance, which was great. And that's never happened to me before, where I've gone to an audition and they've just handed me the script.
Yeah, wow.
Right then and there. Yeah, that
that's
was
pretty
crazy.
Great.
Right, yeah. So I was excited about that. So, and I think, too, again, you know, it was like a no-pressure kind of audition. Like, I'm new here. I don't expect to be cast. But, you know, I just want to be seen. And then if he has something in the future, great. And bam, here's your script. So I guess I would say that it's just made me look at that whole auditioning process as exactly what it is. It's just, you know, a roll of the dice. And if they like what rolls out, you're there. If they don't, it's nothing personal.
Yeah. So since you've been there in the desert and you've been enjoying your surroundings, is that what inspired you to do the podcast, the Desert Lady Diaries?
Yeah, there was actually two reasons for that. One was when I was in LA, I was thinking about doing a blog. And the blog would have been something, I can't think of anything to relate it to other than woman of a certain age with a certain amount of life experience, sharing that with younger women. Like, don't make these mistakes. I did this and it didn't work out. Don't do it.
I've been trying to figure out how to do that myself. So I'll read your blog.
Right. So I did the whole, I set up the website, I bought the domain, I've been paying for it for 3 years, never launched it. So I come out to the desert, all that's still in the background. And I don't know, I guess it was within the first 6 or so months, I was trying to think of what is something that I could do to promote and market my voice that, I don't know whether I was actually looking for something to entertain people with, but that I could do to do that. You know what I'm saying?
I just love the idea that you're like, listen, entertainment was not part of the equation.
No, not really. So, because it really is, I was looking for like a marketing vehicle for my voice.
Totally.
I could do a podcast, and then what am I going to do the podcast about? And I'm like, oh, wait, there's that, you know, blog that you've been sitting on for 3 years. Why don't you do that? But at the same time, I was meeting my people here in the desert, and many of them were women who either moved here single on their own, like me, or had been here since the early 70s, or had been born and raised here. And then the more I dug into the local history, I learned a lot about, particularly in a town east of here called 29 Palms, that was a huge homesteading community. And the reason that it sort of got populated in the 20s and 30s was, one, the government was giving away land, essentially. So if you came out here, initially it was, I think, up to 160 acres. And then in the 30s and 40s, they kind of chunked it down to like 5-acre plots or something like that. So you came out here and you built a 10 by 10 cabin and you inhabited it for a certain number of years, they would just give you the land. The flip side of that was, at the same time, there were also a lot of men who were coming back from the World Wars and had mustard gas poisoning. And there was this doctor in Pasadena who was sending these guys out to the desert because the air was so good for their asthma and their lungs. So what was happening was, these men in ill health were coming to the desert with their wives, who were essentially the ones who were like, yeah, we need to build this cabin, we need to dig this well, we need to, and then a lot of also single women came out because this is a place where they could get land and kind of be by themselves and, you know, not be bothered by anybody. So there were there's a history of women coming to the desert and doing amazing things. And as I'm meeting my community, when I first moved here, I was meeting all these women. One of them was like running for Congress. One of them was helping immigrant prisoners in the Adelanto prison that's nearby. And of course, then there's also the musicians and the painters and the potters and just so much stuff happening with these women. So I thought, well, maybe, you know, and being the climate that we're in with the Me Too movement and, you know, kind of trying to bring up women and empower women in more ways, what a great idea this would be to talk to these women who live here and who've made this their home. So I have people on that have been here, I don't know, 6 months. Some of them have been here their whole lives. Some of them tell me, you know, came here with my husband. He was going to be a school teacher. I thought we'd be here 3 years. And here I am, 89 years old, 50 plus years later, and I'm still here, you know, and talking to them about what it is that keeps them here and some of the things that they've done. One woman told me, you know, after I raised my kids with my husband, and she's in her 70s now, she said, I told him I wanted to go to work because I wanted my own Social Security. I didn't want to have to depend on, you know, what might come from him. So there's just a lot of really cool, interesting women here. And it turned out to be really more of a promotion of my community and the women that are in it than really my voice. And I feel like that's okay. I'm so cool with that. And the 29 Palms Historical Society had recently, I made an agreement with them that all of the podcasts to date and the future ones until it, you know, ends, will be in their archives now, which is kind of cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So my legacy here will be, you know, all of these interviews that I've done with all of these women and just documenting this time in this particular place and, you know, some of the things that have gone on here and how women were involved in getting them done.
Hmm. It's really great.
Yeah, it's been really cool. I'm released episode 82 this week. I do one a week. It's a 30-minute conversation with women who have found their home in the Mojave Desert.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been great. I've gotten to meet, what I like about it is that I, you know, we go out a lot here. People say, what do you do in the desert? I'm like, you have no idea. I could be out every night of the week if I wanted to. There's so much going on here, particularly culturally, you know, which is great. And I totally lost my train of thought with where I was going with that. But we see each other out and it's like, hey, how are you? How's that thing? Oh, good. Okay, see you next time. And there's not this real, like, sit down deep conversation to find out where they came from and why they're here and what makes them stay here and what they're doing here. And I feel really lucky that, you know, whenever I have somebody and I do the interviews in my kitchen at my kitchen table, so it's super comfortable for them. I feel lucky that I get 30 minutes of one-on-one time with these women and, you know, kind of find out what they're up to. And then when the podcast comes out, the listeners get to have that too. And I think it's brought a lot of people, sometimes I'll run into people and they'll look at me because I'll be talking and they'll look at me with a strange look and they're like, why do I feel like I know you? You sound so familiar. I'm like, do you listen to Desert Lady Diary? Oh my God, I love that thing. So
that's
it's
so
really
great.
Been great because what's fun is then they tell me, they're like, oh, and when you interviewed, you know, so-and-so and she talked about that book, I went and got that book. And I have to get in touch with her and tell her how great that book was for me because blah, 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 blah. And it's so there have been some connections made or people meet each other out and they're like, oh, I heard your episode on the podcast. I didn't know this about you. I thought I know her, but I didn't know this. And so it's been a really great thing to bring our the women of our community together. And I know there are some men that listen too. But I think it's been a really great vehicle for the women of this community to know each other and also know a little bit about each other's stories and to hear especially the elders talk about, you know, everything that they've done and what the place was like 50, 60 years ago compared to what it is now. It's super interesting. So it's a lot of fun.
You know, earlier we were talking about some negative things with reference to the internet, but boy, the internet is great for this kind of stuff, for the kind of stuff where it's like, you can learn the history of this particular area from the point of view of the women through
right.
this podcast. Like,
yeah.
Because you think about historical stories and like, we're just being told what they decided to tell us. You know what I mean? Like there's no real way, unless you find, you do like a lot of research, there's almost no way to find out that what they told
right.
you was not right. So it's great that we live in this day and age where, you know, it's not just whoever ends up writing the history books for right now won't be the only ones with a voice. You know, there'll be so many other things that people can find. I mean, hopefully, I don't know how the internet's going to work forever, but,
right.
but, you know, at least in your case, that historical society will have, you know, records of that so that, you know, even if the internet doesn't exist, somebody can go into the historical society and listen. They'll be like,
exactly.
You see this old technology? This is called an MP3.
Oh. Right.
Click the button, Judith. Mm-hmm. Click it.
It'll be like Sweet when we talk about 8 tracks.
Yeah, yeah. Take
yeah.
the thumb drive and plug it in. Whoa, it's crazy.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
I love thinking
so, yeah,
about that stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad. That sounds
yeah,
like
no,
such a
great
experience
ride.
For you.
Yeah, no, it's been great. I mean, as you know, it can be challenging. You know, every week you're sitting down and I don't know, you know, you must spend a little more time editing because your podcast is longer. But, you know, people are surprised when I say, yeah, 30-minute episodes takes anywhere from 4 to 6 hours. And they're like, wait, what? I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I've got to book the guest, and then you're at my house for, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, and then I edit it, and then I've got to do all the social media and the uploading and the newsletter and the blog, and, you know, it all adds up.
Oh, yeah.
So
there's so much to
it. Yeah, absolutely. And I just recently went on Patreon. I've got 4 patrons. I just started at the beginning of January.
Cool.
And that's actually, that's not been bad. Getting a little, money that way, which kind of covers the costs that are involved, because people don't realize that either. You know, they think, oh, it's a free podcast. And I'm like, well, yeah, to you. But there is a, small cost involved. So,
yeah.
But I feel like it's worth it. I mean, and it's grown very organically. I did an Instagram handle for it probably a month before I started it, which generated a lot of interest, which was great. And since then, just recently, I was featured along with 2 other interesting podcasts in the desert. One is called Desert Oracle. It's kind of a strange, weird, he uses kind of music in the background and tells weird desert stories. And the other one is Myth in the Mojave. The 3 of us were recently featured in the Palm Springs Desert Sun newspaper. They come out with a monthly magazine called Desert Magazine. And the 3 of us were featured as 3 podcasts you should listen to if you want to learn more about the California desert. I thought that was really cool. Yeah, and which is great because, as you know, the more that stuff gets out there, the more people kind of check it out and tune in. And I've got people listening from New York and Kansas. And if you go on SoundCloud and look at the things, they're different countries because there are women that I've interviewed here that have come here from Norway and Hungary and stuff like that. And those are super interesting stories, too. But it's just interesting to see the people who they like came out to visit, and maybe they found the card that I put in the, local smoothie shop or whatever. And they say, oh my God, I loved it there so much. And listening to this podcast really helped me stay connected to it. We're hoping to move out there. We're trying to make that happen. And this is really good because we're learning a bunch about the area and the people who live there. So it's really been a great experience. I'm glad I started it.
Yeah. So when you started the idea of the blog, you said you had all these bits of advice that you wanted to share with people. Do you have any advice for people? I mean, because your whole life has been in performing in theater. You've acted on all the media, and you've done a lot of stuff. You've kept it going. You've been around the country doing all sorts of stuff. What advice do you have for people starting out? Like if they're just getting out of their theater school and they just got their drama degree, or if they are just finished a year at an improv school and they're like, well, how do I become an actor, or any advice related to the creative career? Did you have any things to share?
Well, I think I would say get started with whatever your heart's desire is immediately. I actually did not get started, even though I wanted to perform. I knew that from the moment I watched, what were we watching? I think it was middle school. They would take our English classes into the city because I was living in New Jersey at the time. I grew up in New Jersey. And we would go on a bus ride and we would go into the city and we would go maybe to a museum. We would go have lunch and then we would go see a matinee. And the first show I saw, which is going to age me completely, was Shenandoah on Broadway. But sitting in that seat, looking at those people on stage, I'm getting emotional about it right now. Just watching what they were doing, it just seemed like the best job in the world. And really it has been for me. But I waited until I was probably over 30 to start. And that had a number of things to do with lack of support from your family, of you can't make a living as an artist, and that sort of thing. So it wasn't until I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, and went to see a show at a local theater. And it was one of these theaters where the woman, you know, the box office and the office manager, and she's doing everything, comes out on stage and says, "Welcome to the Old Courthouse Theater." And, you know, and by the way, we have a Christmas show coming up. We're doing It's a Wonderful Life. So we're having auditions, blah, blah, blah. And that was one of my first auditions, was going and auditioning for them. And I was in a number of shows at that theater. And that is what really got me going. The problem with that was that by the time I got to LA, I was an older actor. And there were many women that have been here much longer than I have that are known names in that age category. So it was a lot harder. It was a lot harder, a lot more hustle to be seen and get an agent and all that kind of stuff. So I guess my advice would be, if you feel like there's something that you want to do, don't wait to get started. The podcast happened very quickly. It came to me. I knew I wanted to do it. I got a couple of dated books from the library and then read one online and just started doing it. And it's happened in, you know, a year and a half, you know, 82 episodes later. So my advice would be, get started as soon as possible on whatever it is that you want to do. And if you're coming to LA, I highly recommend a business book. Or, you know, if you're in one of the major markets, like Atlanta is, you know, pretty major market for film and television. I would highly recommend a book by Bonnie Gillespie called Self-Management for Actors. And that was, her workshop was the first workshop that I took when I came to LA. But I had read the book prior to that. And it's a really great reference manual, if you will, because everybody focuses on the craft, but they don't really tell you much about the business.
Yeah.
And you need that business side. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be in a acting studio when I was in Florida that was run by a actor who had been here in LA and then moved back to Orlando. And near the end of our, you know, studio run, if you will, of classes, she would have maybe one night where she talked about this sort of stuff. But you really need a lot more knowledge than you might think.
Yeah.
And I mean, Bonnie's book covers everything from, you know, how to write, you know, your pitch letters to your agents and, you know, doing casting director workshops or not and those kind of things. So it's a, you know, if you can pick it up from the library, you can probably even get a used one online. It's well worth it. And she's on Instagram and stuff like that, and she puts stuff out. So,
oh, so people can even start take her workshop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really great. That's interesting. Well, first thing I wanted to say was, like, I'm so excited that you found it, because, you know, you're right. There's a lot of things in this world that hold us back, from people mm-hmm. telling you not to do it, to just fear in general, to, you know, even you know, larger corporations trying to keep us poor. You know, we want to make sure we can fulfill our dreams. We can do stuff, but to do it, there's a lot of big leaps you have to take to get there.
Yeah. But I feel like if it's in you and you know that, it's going to happen. You know, the universe is, like we talked about earlier, you're going to get the clues. You know, you're going to get those gut feelings. Be tuned in enough to follow them and have faith that you're moving in the right direction.
Look at look for your clues. You're giving yourself clues. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I really kind of appreciate having this conversation about this, because I'm in like a weird place, like creatively. Mm-hmm. So I'm totally looking for clues about my next like journey. And I like just talking about it. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I just got to keep looking. I just got to keep finding it and see what's going on. You know,
right.
It's super interesting. Mm-hmm. May I ask another question about your experience?
Absolutely. Sure.
Sure. When you said when you moved to LA, you know, there was sort of already an a lot of older women that had been working hard, so they had sort of found their place and they had earned being in a specific spot. How did you, but yet you have still worked quite a bit. So how did you break through there? How did you get to the point where, you know, you earned their trust and respect and got into the auditions and were like, no, I can do this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, the first part of it, which a lot of people that are in the industry don't get, is that it's, first of all, especially in LA, to get an audition is amazing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times they're only calling in 10 or 15 people for one of these co-star, you know, the girl who's at the convenience store that the store, the leads of the show are coming in to buy beer at, that says, here's your change, or that'll be $5.99. They're calling in 10, 15, maybe 20 people. So just to get called in to say, that'll be $5.99, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, you either have that look or something like that, that, you know, that they saw something in you. And then the other thing is getting called back by the same casting director. That's when you know that you've made some impression on them and they want to continue to bring you in because they know eventually. I mean, the guy that I mentioned early on that I moved to LA with, when we were in Florida, I can't tell you how many times we put ourselves on tape for, what was that show out of Atlanta with, it was like about the wives of the servicemen who, was it called Army Wives? I think it was called Army Wives.
Yeah, I think so. Army Wives, yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I put myself on tape for that show and how many times Tim put himself on tape for that show. And finally, he got, I think it was a callback. I can't remember if he got booked or a callback. And production called and said, you know, was giving him some information about traveling up to Atlanta to shoot. And then he said something like, well, I'm really so glad after X number of auditions, I think it was close to 20. And the guy said to him, he goes, well, we've been rooting for you. We can't tell you how many times you were like in the top two or, you know, three of the ones we were selecting. And we went with the other person. And those are the things that you never hear and that you never know.
Yeah, right.
You know,
that's insane.
So, yeah, I mean, it can happen at any time. And all it takes is one thing. You know what I mean? Sometimes all it takes is one series or one, you know, you come on as a co-star or guest star and you make an impression on somebody. I have a friend recently in LA who was called back. He did some creepy guy role on Superstore and suddenly got a call, I don't know, six weeks later, they wanted him to come in for, I think it was the season finale episode. I'm not sure. He'll let me know when it's going to be coming on. But, and the other thing is, you know, you go in and you do these small roles and you tell all your friends and then you watch the episode and you're like, what happened to me? And they end up just cutting the scene or whatever. You don't know.
No, like, totally.
Crap. I just told all my Facebook people that I was going to be on tonight. And I wasn't.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's just all that stuff. And I think it goes back to what I said earlier about when you go on the audition, you can't take it personally. You just have to walk in the room, do your best job, and leave and forget it. You know? Because I've walked into some rooms and thought, oh my God, I just jacked that up. And guess what? They call me back. So you just don't know.
Yeah, I have a Facebook group of ladies who are all involved in comedy, and people will post things about auditions sometimes. They're like, I just went on this audition and it went terribly. And then everybody posts their commiserating stories. And man, there's some doozies where they're like, here's one terrible audition that I actually got. Okay.
Right.
Like the end of the story is I did get the role, but here's the story. You're like, oh boy. Yeah, man. Man, it's a wild thing. It is a wild,
is.
Wild situation.
Yeah, It's like a roller coaster, but I mean, you can make it work for you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. If you've got a, like you said earlier, but you got a good side hustle that's flexible and they understand, you know, and most of us are not going to be out front all the time. Most of us are going to be the character actors, the ones that are kind of in the background, but you know what? They work a lot longer than your, you know, ingenues and those people, you know, they wear out after a while, you know, but we'll keep working. Yeah,
absolutely. I saw on your website there was a mention of channeling Margot Martindale, and I was like, yeah, now that's somebody to try to be for sure. She's in everything.
Right?
Like,
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the career to have, you know?
I love that kind of stuff. In fact, one of my favorite things is I'm a big follower of people in commercials. You know, like I'll notice a guy in a commercial, I'll be like, oh, that was good. Good job, guy. And then I'll keep my eye out for him. And then he'll be in something else. And I'm like, I don't know this person. I have no way of getting in touch with this person, but I'm just like proud of them. Like I'm like excited at my house. I'm like, dude, you were just selling me toothpaste. Now you're going to be in this Orbitz commercial. You're good. You're good. I like it. You know.
Well, and it's fun to see your friends too.
Oh,
because
yeah.
That happened to me a couple of times. Yeah, well, like I said, my friend has been going on to Superstore, and then I'll be sitting here watching a commercial. I'll go, oh, my God. And I'll have to, you know, Facebook them or whatever and say, hey, I just saw your spot. So it's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, my uncle is an actor in L.A., and he lived in New York for a long time. So he has his consummate three or four episodes of Law & Order. So whenever I'm watching the original, you know, occasionally he'll pop up and I'm like, ah,
right. Yeah.
You know, and he's like the cop who's like, the body's over there. Like, I mean, that's it. But like, we're still like,
yeah,
exactly.
Right. And he's still getting paid.
Right.
Yeah.
Good old TBS. Oh, man. So great. Thank you so much for sharing everything with me.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm really excited for the adventures that you're on. And also, like, I know that we didn't talk a lot about, usually I talk a lot more about, like, you know, how you got into it and stuff. But I was so fascinated by your experience now living in the desert. And then when you mentioned how sort of cosmic and how it seemed to come together so perfectly, it was like, oh, wow. No, this is the most interesting part, because it's just such an amazing adventure. And what a wonderful thing in the world that we live in, where we're able to travel wherever we want and live in any city that we want. It's nice when you find a place that feels like home.
Yeah. And that's what many of the, not only the women that I interview here, but, you know, often a lot of the men that I talk to, a lot of the people that are here, either came here for a visit and were just taken by the place. It just, you know, kind of sucked them in and they just fell in love with it. And it can be, and the other thing about this community is that you are so free and welcome to express and experience. I mean, people come out here not being creative at all and end up doing great work, whether, you know, whatever medium it's in, whether it's music or it's painting or, you know, pottery, recycled art, anything. And that's a beautiful feeling to come out. I mean, I've recently just picked up some blank cards because I used to paint cards and make handmade cards. And I haven't done it for a long time. And I just got this urge to, you know what, I want to get some cards and do some painting. And I just recently started taking piano lessons because I've always wanted to learn to play the piano. And I credit this place. I mean, there's also a, you know, kind of a pretty easy cost of living here, hard to find jobs. So if you do online work and things like that, you can make it happen. But the time and the space really afford you the opportunity to explore, whether you're exploring in the national park just on hikes and exploring nature, or you're going inside of yourself and exploring all these different things that you either wanted to try or wanted to do, and just seeing how that all pans out. It's pretty great.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your stories, and just thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.